this is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Welcome to the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. My name is Raymond Grenfell, with you until 12 o'clock. But before we go any further, huge respect and love to Jeff for another excellent edition of On The Record. He'll be back next week, but of course you can catch On The Record every weekday morning here on RTRFM from 9 in the AM. Also thanks to Samuel for the news. He'll be back at 12 o'clock with more RTRFM news updates. As I said, though, this is the Indie Media Show. That's the news and views from the open publishing wires of the interwebs. And on today's program, we're going to be, taking an in-depth look at a very significant and important issue that we have covered a bit on the show, but we're going to be talking about Murujuga country, and by that I mean the Burrup Peninsula. There's been a lot of activity up there. Recently there was a demonstration, a protest that you may have heard about or even attended, organised by Save Our Songlines, a group of traditional owners up there, where they marched on country to demonstrate their opposition to the expansion of industry in the Burrup. There's a lot of activity proposed. You may have seen in this last week that the Perdaman's urea plant expansion has been thankfully put on hold by the Federal Environment Minister, Tanya Plibersek. But there's a lot of industry proposed. There is the Northwest Shelf expansion, Woodside's Northwest Shelf expansion in Karratha. And then, of course, there is the Scarborough Gas Hub that I'm sure many of you have heard about. Now, this is a very significant area. It's Murujuga is home to over a million petroglyphs and rock art engravings. Many refer to it as Australia's Stonehenge. It is incredibly culturally significant. There is even the first ever depiction of a circle in human history. And this is an area that is very much being, exploited by the gas and mining interests and other companies such as Perdaman, and traditional owners are really getting together to try and stop the destruction of what is a very, very sacred space. And of course, it all ties into the climate crisis. So many environmentalists and those of us that perhaps want to leave a planet for future generations are concerned about this huge expansion of industry up there, particularly when we have a federal government that's supposedly taking climate action and yet at the same time supporting projects such as the Scarborough Gas Hub, what will be the largest polluter in the Southern Hemisphere. So on today's show, we're going to focus pretty much just on this issue and hear a bunch of voices from those who are trying to do what they can to stop the expansion of industry in the Burrup Peninsula. We're going to be hearing from a few different Murujuga traditional owners. We're going to be hearing from Patrick Churnside. Patrick is a Nalama elder. He was there at the protest, the Save Our Songlines protest back in July 10. We're also going to be hearing from Marudanera elders Josie Alec and Raylene Cooper, two Indigenous elders up there that have been very involved in the campaign to protect Murujuga. They also headed off relatively recently to the UN to make their case for the protection of this World Heritage Site. And we're also going to be hearing from Gerard Mazza. Gerard is a member of the Scarborough Gas Action Alliance and has been very involved in the campaign to stop Scarborough Gas, but also just more broadly protect Murujuga. So I think a very important show, and if anyone listening is concerned about the climate crisis, is concerned about protecting sacred sites or world heritage, cultural heritage sites, I think it's an important show to listen to this week. Now, as I said at the top of the program, we're going to be really focusing on Murujuga or the Burrup Peninsula today. Now, in recent news, the EPA here in WA have approved an extension of Woodside's Northwest Shelf Gas Processing Facility. It's been given a 50-year extension, and that's a lot of conservationists and environmental groups and others are quite concerned with that, given the climate crisis and the fact that we should, as a country, be really aiming to reduce our emissions. To talk about this and some of the other issues connected, and more specifically just the gas expansion in Murujuga. I had an opportunity earlier today to speak to Gerard Mazza. Gerard is from the Scarborough Gas Alliance, and I start just by asking, what's the significance of the EPA's decision to extend and this Northwest Shelf project?
Sure. So the Northwest Shelf has been operating since the 1980s and was kind of due to finish up in 2030. The EPA have just approved an extension of 50 years on that. So they've allowed that facility to operate until 2070, well past the time which we need to have transitioned away from fossil gas. And so this is really a key plank in Woodside's broader Burrup Hub expansion plan. So, you know, we've heard a lot about Scarborough lately, but Scarborough's only really the start. There's plenty more in the pipeline, so to speak. So this is more emissions than Scarborough that we're looking at here, billions and billions of tons of emissions, allowing Woodside to process gas from all over the place, including some of the gas that will be or is proposed to be fracked in the Kimberley, various offshore fields. So, to extend a fossil fuel project to 2070 is totally kind of beyond what anyone would think is reasonable in the midst of a climate crisis.
It is pretty crazy, and I guess this is all a part of the so-called gas-led recovery, and you know, you obviously Scarborough Gas is perhaps the one that a lot of people think of, but as you're saying there, it's really just a massive expansion of the industry in the borough, but also in the entire Northwest, and you mentioned fracking there as well. I guess looking at, you know, Scarborough Gas and the potential impacts of that, as perhaps, you know, one of the projects a lot of people are familiar with. Can you give our listeners a bit of an update to where that's at and you know, how is it connected to this expansion? You know, as you said there, it's Woodside really, you know, the beginning perhaps of their plans. But, you know, how far along is Scarborough Gas and how much of a worry is it, if particularly for those of us who are concerned about the you know, the climate crisis?
Yeah, look, I mean, Scarborough is sadly pretty far ahead. They have begun some work offshore, some preliminary work, and they're gearing up to begin the onshore work for the Pluto processing facility, which again is part of this broader Burrup hub. So Pluto 2, Scarborough, the Northwest Shelf Extension, all of it kind of comes under this umbrella. There are still avenues left for stopping Scarborough. The NOPSEMA offshore regulation is one place where it can be stopped. But, I mean, I think we also have to be aware that we're operating in this context of state capture. And as you say, there's this whole idea of the gas recovery, which even with a change of government hasn't definitely not gone away. The Scarborough is looking more and more likely, and I think that the construction is going to begin, or is proposed to begin, in earnest later in the year. I'm sure there'll definitely be some pushback to that, and I think that there'll be some direct action that'll take place to kind of try and physically stop that. I mean, I think it's worth noting that the appeal that you just mentioned to the EPA, there was a record number of appellants there. There are 759 appeals submitted, that the previous record was about 100 and something for the Bunbury Outer Ring Road. And so I think that does speak to kind of the depth of concern in the community. And I get the feeling that many of those people, you know, if the EPA is allowed to continue with this decision and it goes ahead, you know, there'll be some more radical tactics used, I dare say, by some of those 750 people.
Now, Outside of the climate crisis, there's also the cultural and heritage significance of the Burrup Peninsula. You know, in particular, the rock art there, and I believe, you know, it's really comparative to, you know, some sites around the world, including Stonehenge and so forth, with even the first ever depiction of a circle in human history up there as a part of that rock art. And of course, it's a very significant and sacred site for traditional owners. Now, outside of the gas expansion, there's also in recent weeks been some of the controversy around Perdaman's urea plant. Her credit, Environment Minister Tanya Plibersek has halted construction, or at least blocked construction temporarily on an expansion of Perdaman's urea plant there. Can you tell us a bit about this plant and what, potential impacts it might have on the rock art and on the area, and how it also feeds into this broader sort of industrial expansion of the area?
Sure, yeah. So many of your listeners, I'd say, probably might have been to Murujuga or the Burrup. And if they haven't, I really recommend it. Like, it is an extraordinary site. There's over a million petroglyphs there. And it really is, you know, this really, you get a sense of this really special, significant place that should be significant for all of us all over the world. And then it's a real spin out, because right there next to this beautiful country and next to these incredible pieces of art, there is all of this existing industry. So there's the Woodside operations, there's the port, and there's also a fertilizer plant. So Perdaman wants to put in another fertiliser plant on the Burrup, a urea plant. One important thing to note is that that can only happen because of Woodside Scarborough. So Perdaman will use gas from Scarborough. They've signed a contract with Woodside, and they will use that to produce urea. So I think we can also kind of consider Perdaman part of that broader Burrup hub expansion, kind of enabled by Woodside. So Perdaman will be built on a site that has a number of significant petroglyphs and a number of significant heritage sites, and those are being forced to be relocated or moved, which for a sacred site, it's not like a piece of art in an art gallery that you can just pick up and move around. It's connected to the country. You know, this is an outrageous thing to be happening in the current climate, post-Juukan Gorge, and in fact the same laws, the Section 18 approvals under the Old Aboriginal Heritage Act that enabled Juukan Gorge are the same laws that have enabled these plans to remove the rock. So, as you say, Tanya Plibersek has paused this, so some traditional custodians from the group Save Our Songlines have been campaigning very hard around this and bringing together many people in the community. And I believe on your show last week or the week before, you spoke to Raylene Cooper, one of those traditional custodians. But if that's a temporary halt while these heritage applications are more fully considered. I think that if the Albanese government are serious about wanting to offer greater protection to Aboriginal heritage, as they've said that they are, well, this is a pretty serious test on that. And Tanya Plibersek herself said Juukan Gorge was one of the most shameful moments in Australian history. And I guess now it's up to her to stop a further incident and further destruction of that kind of precious heritage. And I think, you know, the Burrup as a place, Murujuga as a place, kind of sums up a lot of the contradictions and conflicts of Western Australia. And this kind of extractive industry, and also this kind of colonial mindset that that is using all of this to create this wealth, which is largely going, Woodside are not paying large amounts of tax, mostly foreign owned, are not actually employing large amounts of people, and they're exploiting this country and these people in Western Australia.
Jared, if you mentioned there the Albanese federal government, and if we could return, I guess, to discussions around climate, supposedly this last federal election was a climate election, you know, and supposedly Australians voted for climate action. What, at least, you know, given the amount of independents and the vote to the Greens, there seems to be at least, you know, somewhat, you know, amount of political will in the community for action on climate change. However, you know, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese updating Australia's nationally determined contribution under the Paris Agreement to simply a 43% reduction on 2005 levels by 2030 and net zero by 2050. Many people, particularly the Greens and other sort of conservationists and environmentalists, have said that this isn't good enough. And of course, this all comes as Albanese's given full support for Scarborough Gas Hub and other, you know, gas-led projects in the country. I mean, politically, it seems like there is the will in the public, but of course, this hasn't been reflected in the ALP or, of course, even major parties. What do you think it says about, I guess, the state of play in Australian politics that we can supposedly have this climate election and yet have this federal Labor government be elected and then back something like Scarborough Gas, what will be, you know, one of the largest polluters in the Southern Hemisphere?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just shows how deeply state capture runs here in Australia and the influence of the fossil fuel industry, the fossil fuel lobby over kind of both those major political parties through donations, through the kind of revolving door of personnel and through the capture of numerous institutions which rely on the resources industry. I think that, you know, the climate election didn't come because of any leadership from the Labor Party. And in fact, it came despite the two parties barely wanting to talk about climate change and not being willing to do what is necessary. And, you know, I think that really the Labor Party are using climate and environmental issues as a bit of a political point scoring thing. So, you know, last week they released the State of the Environment report and told us how bad that is, and then in the same breath, Tanya Plibersek and Anthony Albanese are defending fossil fuel expansion. And so, you know, they're not taking this seriously. No one can read that report and no one can look at the science and think that fossil fuel expansion is a good thing. So I think we need to be kind of really vigilant. We need to hold them to account, and we need to counter this narrative of saying, oh, well, you know, it's a step in the right direction and it's better than the last lot. This is an issue where we really are in an urgent situation, and if you're not walking the walk, then we need to call that out, in my view.
Certainly. Just finally there, Jared, if there isn't, I guess, the political leadership, as you've, you know, well said there, and, you know, perhaps throughout history, there really has very rarely been a time in which, you know, I guess there's been social progress, for want of a better word, from above, and usually these things come from the grassroots and from, you know, community organising. I guess where does it leave us as, you know, individuals and communities are facing this, you know, catastrophic climate crisis? We're seeing, you know, the heat waves and the fires throughout Europe at the moment, and the flooding on the East Coast. We're very much living in this reality. You know, no longer is it very much an existential threat. I think it's quite easy to say now that it's very much a lived reality for many people in the world, the climate crisis. Where does it leave us, and what can people do when faced with, I guess, such a, you know, overwhelming grief and despair and disempowerment from our political system?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think you've said it pretty perfectly in that it's got to come from below. It's got to come from the grassroots. It's got to come from ordinary people. I think in this context, that can look like many different things. It can look like people kind of beginning to build the alternative world that we need in their own communities and in their own lives. But there is also this need, I guess, to kind of stand up and to resist. So, I mean, just on a practical level, I guess, here in WA, I think we can't just leave this fight up to the NGOs. They have their own limitations and their own kind of systemic problems. We need to have ordinary people coming together and talking to each other, working with each other. In terms of the Scarborough fight, there's a few different things. There's the Save Our Songlines campaign, the kind of traditional owner-led campaign, which people can support and get behind and have a look at their social media. The Scarborough Gas Action Alliance are challenging the social licence of Woodside through doing actions at the Fremantle Dockers games. That's been going on for a few weeks, so people can have a look at that and get involved with that. And there is a kind of broader direct action coalition forming Disrupt Burrup Hub. So head to disruptburruphub.com to find out more about that, because, yeah, there's a need to say yes to the alternatives and things we want, and there's a need to really firmly say no to the destructive tendencies that are going on. And, I'm pretty keen to use, if anyone's going to be removing rock art sites on the Burrup, or if they're going to be building these developments, I'm pretty keen to do whatever I can to get in the way of that. No one's going to come and save us. We've got to do this ourselves, and that desire to have someone to save us, I think, is kind of part of the problem too.
That was Gerard Mazar speaking to us earlier today. Gerard's a part of the Scarborough Gas Action Alliance and a campaigner to protect Murujuga, the Burrup Peninsula. And shortly on the program, we're going to be hearing from traditional owners from that area. We're going to be hearing from Josie Alec and Raylene Cooper, who are two Madu Dinera elders. And a little later, we'll hear from Nalama elder Patrick Churnside, all of which are busy fighting to protect their land. We're going to continue our conversation now about Murujuga, or the Burrup Peninsula, and the threat that the gas expansion of the area is causing Murujuga and the sacred land and the rock out there, including the millions of petroglyphs. A few weekends ago, fresh from speaking at a United Nations event, a group of traditional owners led a march on Murujuga to express their opposition to further industrial development in the area. Two of those elders are longtime campaigners for protection of that land, Madu Dinera elders Josie Alec and Raylene Cooper. Indie Media's Jesse Noakes was up there participating in the rally and covering it, and he spoke to both Josie Alec and recorded a bit of Raylene Cooper's speech at the event.
Hey, Jess.
Hey, Joyce. What do you reckon? How's the vibe? How's it feel?
Oh, it's pretty good. Like, good. Yes, everyone's showing some unity here today, so it's really good. Yes, it's been a long time coming, but, again, we've got people here that have been fighting for this country forever and a day, and here we are walking the road again, and it's a really good thing to be a part of, so...
Feel like it's moving forwards? Feel like there's progress being made on a day like this?
Definitely, when you have a lot of people all together and, you can hear them standing up for the country. Yeah. What a great feeling, It's all from your heart. It's awesome. Yeah. It's a good thing.
What do you hope happens next?
Well,
have a bit of a break, maybe?
Have a bit of a break, yeah, but, we've got some awesome people around to keep fighting the fight and sharing the load, which is awesome, and more people that stand up and talk about this place, give it a voice, the better.
When we speak, when I speak on behalf of all the Ngarrindjeri people all over this continent, because we have had a lot of, incoming through messages and emailing from other people in the Kimberleys, New South Wales, Queensland mob up in the Northern Territory. There's been lots of feedback from them in terms of what's happening, because all the Scarborough project is actually getting drawn from all these other country mob who are having fracking in the Kimberleys, family mob from that side. They're very, very worried. The broom mob from James Price Point, we've been told that that's starting up again because of this gas. So this place is going to be the hub for all these destructive destruction that's going on within the environment all around. So it's a big hub. That's why they call it the Scarborough Hub. Look, I won't touch too much on that base because there's been a lot being said about the Scarborough Hub, but no, definitely we don't want it. We never have. And for those individuals who have, they didn't get enough informed information in terms of what's been going on. Once I knew really what was going on out here, it was a no from me, and we got to draw the line somewhere. Look, in the UN, it's very scary. Hot place, I tell you. And all I took was warm stuff, so that didn't help me at all. So anyway, look, at the end of the day, it was a beautiful place. Never ever in a million years have thought we'd get to where we are today. And to be in a place like that, look, I can only say that, you know, the words from those First Nations people from their countries, it's horrific of what we heard. It's things that you only hear and see on the news and on TV, but to feel all this suffering and trauma from a lot of these First Nations people, it's horrific. And myself, my mum and I, you know, I had to excuse myself out of the room a number of times because of what traumas that a lot of First Nations people all over the world are experiencing because of mining. And I will never forget, you know, our time there and the people that we've met. But the devastation that's been created all around the world, not only our country and Australia itself, but it's just too much now. And you're right, when Nunn talks about global warming, we're seeing it in our countries, over in eastern states in particular. It's the fourth time now that they're going through flooding, and it's affecting everybody all over the world. And you know, a lot of the stuff that we've seen in the past from our old people, and that's why we're here. You know, they never had the chance to speak and to talk for this Noongar. And it's just not fair. And the procedural fairness has never been that way for First Nations people. And it's time the governments and industry start listening, because this is about all of us. Because we all breathe this air, and we all wake up in the morning and we put our feet on the ground. And we need to start giving back to Mother Earth, because this is the only place we have left. We can't go anywhere else. So please, thank you everybody, and for all the First Nations people that we were introduced to and that we met over in the UN, we give our big love and support to all of you, because the work you do is really important, and it's about recognition of our culture and our history. And for all my old people, it's me remembering them and my mum, who's given me all the support and love from her world to us today, and for us to stand up for what we know is right. And what we know is right is our future. And in front of us we have our kids, our grandkids. You know, they are our future, and then their future's future. So this is something for everybody, for all of us. So thank you very much for being here, and big love to you all. Very, very grateful.
That's Martin Nenera Elder Raylene Cooper speaking at the Save Our Songlines protest a few weeks ago on Murujuga country. We also heard from another Maritu Dinera elder, Josie Alec. You're on the Nimidi Show on RTR FM 92.1. In a little bit, we're going to be hearing from Nalama elder Patrick Chernside about why he participated in the demonstrations to protect Murujuga country. Continue now our conversation around the expansion of industry in the Burrup Peninsula, the Murujuga country. As you just heard a little early in the program, there was a protest, a rally up in the Burrup Peninsula a few weekends ago on July 10, led by a whole group of traditional owners, many people that have been campaigning for a very long time. And one of those people that was there is the Nalama elder and former advisor to the Murujuga Aboriginal Corporation, Patrick Chernside. Indie Media's Jesse Noakes had the opportunity to sit down and have a quick chat to Patrick about why he was there supporting the Save Our Songlines demonstration.
Jesse, we're all gathered here today as part of the Save Our Songlines organisation, which is planned this event in the March for Country on Murujuga. Basically, to raise more awareness about some of the impacts and of, you know, carbon emissions that development and industry has had in this country of Murujuga. Not so much, I guess, over the last 40 years or so, but some of these new developments that have been, you know, heavily promoted and sort of put out there in the public at present, saying that it's critical to the development of our nation, you know, and our economies, But at the same token, you know, we have some of those environmentalist organizations and even from the government levels expressing deep concern about the very impacts of these industry emissions and developments. So in some ways, I guess it's, you know, we're out here today expressing and getting the message and awareness that industry cannot coexist with our culture and heritage in Murujuga. And we need to make that clear for some of those that may not see that same view.
And how do you feel as a custodian of Murujuga and a senior Ngalama man seeing the way that industry presses so close up against this ancient rock art? How does that make you feel as someone who's so connected with Murujuga and has obligations and responsibility here in a cultural way?
I guess it's sometimes disheartening for me, Jesse. It's sometimes frustrating. But more so, you know, some of the feelings I carry and hold is something that I have to maintain in some ways. And it's been that way, I could say safely, you know, for the last probably 30, 40 years now. But coming into a generation of understanding where, you know, some of our elders and key senior elders today may not have that fully understanding or awareness of legislation and changes in rules that make things like this, you know, approvals for industry to impact heritage, okay. You know, where I speak of that in a sense of songlines or culturally, when we talk of legislation and laws that says one particular piece of rock art or one particular piece of flake stone tool does not meet the requirement of a legislative law, my songs, my old people's ceremonies and songlines still today can sing for that one particular piece of artifact. And that's the thing that frustrates me the most, I guess, Jesse, is, you know, having full knowledge and understanding of that in the context of today's society. Our old people may not fully understand some of that. I guess more to put it to the point, we need better and free prior understanding of the impacts industry is making out on country. And some of our key knowledgeable senior elders who may not have that understanding in literature of today, they need time to comprehend that. If it takes some of these elders or senior people 6 months, a year to fully concept and understand that, then so be it. But the industries and some of the laws and legislation tell us you've got 30 seconds and your time is running out.
Conversely, how does it make you feel to see so many people gathered here today, coming together on country and walking on country, marching on country to add their voice of support for custodians?
I think it's very overwhelming at the moment, Jesse, walking with a group of people, you know, some may be strangers to this country and may not fully understand the significance of it. But seeing them here, getting up, standing up and showing up today speaks volumes in some ways than what most politicians or, you know, ministers of cabinet may have in their understanding. So I say in some ways, some of the action we take today hopefully can speak louder than some of those words they may talk.
And what is it that you want those words to say? What do you want to say to government and to industry? What are you hoping to see in the future, moving forwards, walking together in a better, more positive way here on Murujuga?
I guess clearly, yes, some of the messages we have consistently been putting out there, Jesse, is about the free, prior and informed consent of some of those industry impacts that is coming to Murujuga or is going to be happening in that one sense. Secondly, is about the independent and autonomous funding that's set in place via some of these agreements. Not having to be stuck to agreements or, I guess, conditions that says to us, you must give this away and you must not object to that. in cultural obligations, I cannot do that.
Is this fairly historic today? Is this the first time that this has happened for a while, seeing people coming together and marching together on country, on Murujuga like this?
I think it's been a while coming, and I think it needs to happen a lot more to create more awareness, not only within our traditional owner communities and our, you know, Aboriginal communities. I think the wider non-Indigenous community share some of the same values we do as custodians of country, but also those who manage land, if you will. The difference is we share different views of how that land can be managed. For example, in the industry's context, their examples of managing land may include what they consider environmental offsets. We call it traditional farming, or we call it some of our traditional ecologies or bush medicines, and the way that we maintain that with the plants, animals, and the cultural sites that exist in places like Murujuga.
And what do you think will happen next with the Save Our Songlines campaign and with the fight, the campaign for Murujuga to protect this country? What happens next after this march today?
I guess what we hope to in the next steps is, I guess, creating that awareness from here, but taking more of that fight and understanding, you know, at the political levels, at government levels that can help, I guess, you know, change that point of view or stance on some of this. Ultimately, you know, as traditional owners and custodians, we don't want to see our country being destroyed, or we want to be able to, at some point, say no. The question is, when are we able to say no as custodians? The laws and legislations of today do not allow us to say no. So I guess for me, that's the next steps in where I want to see this legacy standing. If we're here to save our songlines, then we must say no to industry where it is possible and when possible. Not because it is something that is tokenistic or obliged to in any agreements.
And just lastly, does this issue only affect the people who have cultural connection and obligation and are custodians and traditional owners of Murujuga, or is it an issue for the wider community and the broader national and international community as well? Do you think it's just about what's happening here, or is there a bigger picture that's involved as well?
I think there's a much bigger picture involved, Jesse, in some of the cultural significance of Murujuga country. As we come to understand as knowledge holders and information keepers, some of our very rock art and petroglyphs that exist here have direct connection through songlines, ceremonies and stories across to those of our First Nation people on the eastern seaboard in places, country like the Blue Mountains, Sydney, Eora Nation people, and some of their stories and connections that come directly from this part of the Murujuga lands. So where we say it's significant, I guess that gives you a context of, if it does, how far some of this significance stretches.
Is there anything else you'd like to say today, Patrick?
No, I guess great to see all the mob out to support, you know, and families and friends here today, and I guess more for those that have travelled far and wide to be here today. You know, it's great to see so much people supporting a worthy cause and one that is much needed in our community today.
That was Nalama Elder Patrick Chernside speaking to Jesse Noakes a few weeks ago at the Save Our Songlines rally on Murujuga land, Murujuga country, otherwise known as the Burrup Peninsula. Hope you've enjoyed the program today on Indie Media. I think it's a very important issue, what's happening in our state's northwest. Look, if you want to get involved, we really recommend that you do. There you can check out, if you want to support the Save Our Songlines campaign, the traditional owner-led campaign. You can find more information about them online, Save Our Songlines. There's also the Scarborough Gas Action Alliance. We spoke to Gerard Mazza earlier. They're doing a whole bunch of actions in Perth. You can support them. Just look up the Scarborough Gas Action Alliance. And also, if you're perhaps sick of doing, just writing petitions and handing out flyers, there is, of course, the Disrupt the Bar Up campaign, or the Disrupt the Bar Up Alliance. It's looking more at direct action, and we, perhaps recommend you check out that as well. Hope you've enjoyed the program. If you want to restream it, you always can do that at rtrfm.com.au. It's also available as a podcast from your various podcast suppliers. You can check it out there. We also have a lot of interviews up on our SoundCloud. If you'd like to get in touch, please do. You can always contact us via the RTRFM offices, studio at rtrfm.com.au, or hit us up on the corporate social media if that's your thing. We'll be back next week at 11 a.m.